Most fascinating thing for me in my property journey was having a discussion with my wife about renting out our existing home so that we could actually move into position to be able to start investing in other properties. Which essentially means we're going move out of home and let's find a place to rent.
You're listening to Property Investor Tales, stories from the front yard. Here's your host, Tabitha Bright.
Hello and welcome to Property Investor Tales, stories from the front yard, where I get to speak to property investors from around Australia about their investing journey. My name's Tabitha Bright and I'm the head of coaching here at Positive Real Estate, where we help people build wealth through property. With over 8,000 clients across Australia and New Zealand, there are some incredible stories to tell, which hopefully make your investing journey that little bit easier and will inspire you along the way. So my guest today is Kang Dang, and we discussed how he freed up some extra servicing to continue to build an investment portfolio, what motivates him the most to succeed, and what he wished he knew when he was younger. A not to be missed conversation with our good friend Kang. Hey everyone, welcome to the podcast. Awesome to have you here. Today I'm interviewing Kang Dang, and Kang comes to us with a wealth in finance experience, commercial lending all the way through to mortgage broking, you name it. He's built businesses and he is now coaching and helping people not only build their businesses like he has successfully, but also take some of that wealth and migrate it into the property market, so property investing as well. So awesome to have you here, Kang. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Tab. It's great to be here.
Awesome. Well, awesome to have you here. So let's find out a little bit about Kang. Let's start with one of my favorite questions, because you never know what comes out of it. What is the weirdest or funniest thing that has happened to you in your property journey, do you think?
The weirdest? I don't know if it's weird, but the most fascinating thing for me in my property journey was having a discussion with my wife about renting out our existing home so that we could actually move into position to be able to start investing in other properties.
Yep.
Which essentially means we're going move out of home and let's find a place to rent. But what's actually really interesting is I had this conversation with my father, who happened to own a rental property down the road from where we actually lived. And he didn't actually understand the idea at the beginning. And once we explained it to him, he was all like, okay, that makes sense. We're happy to rent you our investment property. So now I live in my parents' investment property while my home is actually being rented out. So
that's cool.
How the investment property journey started for us.
Well, that's cool. And so for a layperson that's not familiar with finance or familiar with investing, why would that be beneficial to you if you're going to pay rent somewhere and move out of your home? How does that help your situation?
Well, mortgages in Sydney especially are actually quite high.
Mm.
So when you take out a mortgage, you know, say you own a home about 1.5 million and you've got $1 million mortgage, there is very little opportunity for you to be able to step into investing because of how big that mortgage is. Yes, there are going to be plans we can put in place to pay it off sooner, but that mortgage sets you back maybe 5 or 10 years before you can actually start looking at investing. So in order for our particular situation, in order for us to be able to move into an area where we can invest, we needed to make our home an actual investment property, which enabled us to have all the negative gearing, all the extra income, which then shifted us in a position to be able to start actually looking at building up our investment property portfolio.
Right.
And then we'll loop back to buying our forever home, you know, maybe 10 or 15 years down the track. So
awesome. Oh, that's fantastic. And it's good to know that there's other strategies out there for people, because often, I'll sit with people and they'll be like, oh, I have to create some financial freedom, some wealth for myself. But, we've got this home, and sometimes people are emotionally attached to their home. Sometimes, they may have been fortunate enough to have stretched initially and got a place that they do want to stay in. The place that I'm in, actually, that we bought here in Melbourne, I actually bought to live in, do a bit of a renovation, and then rent it. But it's ended up being our forever home, which is really random. I've done the opposite.
So good.
But a nice renovation certainly helped with that decision. But it's good to know that there are options for people if they do have that big mortgage. And it does come down to what are you prepared to do, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the question, and when I talk to a lot of my clients, it's not a matter of how, it's not about if you can do it or not. It's when and how do you go about doing it, and what are you actually willing to do during that, during that journey in order to achieve that. I completely understand. I work with clients who come to me saying, "I want to buy my home. I want to buy my home." And especially with clients in Sydney, I'm saying, okay, understandably, yes, we wanted you to get you into your home and we want you to be able to own it. But for a lot of people, they actually don't think about the journey as well, because there is, I need to get a property for now with my partner, which could be a, say a small apartment. But at some stage, you're going to upgrade and potentially move depending on where your kids are actually going to school. And then when they all move out, you're most likely not going to stay in that big house that, you've had the whole family live in. So there is going to be a downgrade. So a lot of times for us, I think we just went, we're happy just to keep renting in these different areas at these different stages. And then, when we're ready to purchase our forever home, we'll just do one purchase. And during that time, the investment property would have been built up enough for us to be in a position to quite comfortably afford where we'd actually ideally want to live later on. So there's being able to look at it from that perspective as well.
Yeah, and I think too, with mortgages like they are now, and the way the property market is going, I mean, Sam and Jason talk all the time about the migration of money, and that can also include the migration of an asset. So, like you said, sometimes what I do hear from people is that they want to get into the home of their dreams immediately. And for my generation, I'm Gen X, don't hold that against me. For the boomers before me, you didn't buy the home of your dreams initially. It was always a stepping stone. And there were sometimes three stepping stones into, the home that was more substantial and more luxurious and had maybe better amenities and things. And, I know that a lot of people are very realistic about this, and people are looking at apartments and townhouses rather than houses. And there can be these different trade-offs. But, don't think of it as a hardship to have those stepping stones in place, because a migration of money and migration of an asset is a normal part of building your wealth. And I think that's something that I'd really like people to understand, rather than having to have the $200,000 or $400,000 deposit and the $2 million mortgage. Like, that's,
Oh yeah, absolutely.
yeah, that to me is
Absolutely. I think there's
stressful.
always understanding of where you'd actually like to be and how to build towards getting that. And I think the property journey is one where you actually have to be patient. And I think there are a lot of people, I suppose, in society at the moment would like to be there already, and understanding that it's a 10, 15, 20-year journey. But when you do get to that point, like life is completely different to what you've ever imagined. So yeah, there's a lot of patience that needs to be implement it, but also understanding that the whole process is a journey that you need to go on. It's not going to happen, you know, in a one to 3 year time frame.
Be nice, but I think there'd be a lot more of us looking to get into the property market if that was the case. So tell us a little bit about yourself, Kane. How did you end up in finance? I believe you've got several hobbies, if I can call them hobbies. That's probably really rude. you don't get to call it a hobby when you represent Australia. So tell me all about you.
Okay, so I'm married with three kids. I've been married for 18 years. Coincidentally, the year I got married was the year we bought a house and we started a business. Because we thought, actually, we didn't put much thought in it, to be honest.
How did that work?
Well, we managed to navigate all three.
Yeah, that's massive.
Business is still here after 18 years. Obviously, we've upgraded our home since then and obviously implemented the other strategy.
Yeah.
And we're still married after 18 years. So
congratulations.
A few things. We've been doing a few things right, I assume. My parents are from Vietnam. So I came over to Australia when I was two. So I've been told I was on a refugee boat at the age of two, and they couldn't keep me quiet because I loved swimming in the ocean. And so when I was on the boat, I saw the ocean, and my parents were telling me that, you know, pirates were sort of around and, you know, we're trying to shut up this little kid because he's so excited to be on a boat. Because he thinks it's all fun as opposed to, you know, the life and death situation that it is. Arrived in Australia at 3 years old, and my dad started his accounting business. So he actually went back to university, did an accounting degree, and opened his own accounting firm. He's going through school, he always envisioned that I would take over the accounting business. as I got towards university, I said no, like accounting isn't. I did 2 weeks of work experience with him and I told him I will never run your accounting business. Like this is not, this doesn't make me happy at all.
How did he take that?
Well, we had another, like my brother was coming through, so he had another option.
Lucky for the brother.
Funny enough, he actually ended up taking over the business. But I went into IT and I did IT for about 6 years while finishing off my degree. And one day my dad at dinner asked me if, you know, I wanted to do broking. And I inquired about it and basically said, look, I'm happy to explore it for a year because I figured if it doesn't work out, I'll just come back to IT. But I told him, I will have to open my own business and you can refer me clients, but I'm not working underneath you. So that was the compromise. It took a number of years for him to sort of step off the, what are you doing? How's he going with this client? All of that sort of stuff, like the micromanaging. But eventually he got comfortable enough to just he knew that I would look after the clients the way he would. And that's pretty much how I started in the finance. I think about a year or two ago, I just realized that within finance, I was quite restricted in how much I could help people and there are bigger conversations. So that's when I started looking into the coaching aspect of it. And obviously exploring property because I had started that journey for myself. So we've got our home as investment property and we've got property within super, which is something you can do. We're looking at, we just purchased the property off the plan as well. So the Hyatt, we We put a deposit on that one. And we're also looking at a commercial property within the business so that we can execute on some of those strategies as well. So so that's where we're at the moment.
So you're going great guns. So I know, having spoken to you, and also because people that are close to you have said to me, Kang is very modest and he won't sing his own praises. So you're a computer engineer, yes?
Yes, I'm a computer engineer. Yeah.
Right. So you're a computer engineer. So to somebody where, I mean, obviously I can use technology to a degree, but I am not a technology and computers and stuff. God, now I really sound like a Gen X, don't I? Just put me in with the boomers. Sorry, boomers. It's not my skill set. You Gen X?
Yeah.
No. Really?
I was born in 1979, so yeah.
Really? Oh, my goodness, I thought you were so much younger.
Thank you. Maybe it's just the
age. Oh, that beautiful skin. My daughter, she has her father was Filipino.
Yeah.
And she's got that same beautiful skin. It's very jealous. Doesn't paint a big Caucasian in the Australian sun, I can tell you. So you're a computer engineer, something that doesn't come naturally to me, so I'm super easily impressed in that space. You've started your own finance business.
Yep.
You've learnt the broking and the broking world. You're investing in property.
Yep.
And you're now coaching in business strategies and property investing alongside Jason and Shay and Sam and the team. And then personally, though, while you're out there raising three boys alongside your wife, not only that, though, you have also exceeded in sport. So tell us a little bit about that.
So I studied martial arts for a while. And I achieved a second dan black belt. And I was helping teaching karate.
Very good.
And after that, I started weightlifting. So I did master's weightlifting, and I had the opportunity to represent Australia.
That's really cool.
At the master's, I think it's the Commonwealth and Oceania.
Oh, yes.
So, yeah, so I had the opportunity to do that as well. So
that's just pretty a couple amazing. Things. What got you into weightlifting? Because that's quite different, because I know you love basketball too. So all of your passions are all very different. So basketball's very different to karate, very different to weightlifting. I would have thought.
Yeah, look, I think at the end of the day, and you know, you as a runner, Tab, you know, like when you get into a particular goal and you need to achieve certain milestones in order to get to execute on those particular goals or hit those goals, for martial arts, that was like I studied martial arts when I was a kid, and at that time my martial arts teacher at that time had an accident, so we no longer, he passed away, so we couldn't train anymore. And I've been trying to find a teacher that I connected with.
Gotcha.
And actually took a while, and originally it was, let's get the kids into martial arts because it's really great. I find that when I start thinking about goals and setting them, I just keep going. And you just keep doing whatever you need, and the kids sort of moved out of martial arts and I was still going in. You know, the instructors were getting me to teach more classes and all of that sort of stuff, and I was like, at one point I just basically said, look, I'd love to continue helping, but you know, my family sort of needed, I needed to be there more for my family. So when your wife kind of goes, oh, you're spending a lot of time training and teaching, and I'm like, okay, we sort of need to reassess life. But for me, it's just those goals. And the same with weightlifting. Originally, I started because having kids, you want to be healthy, run around with your kids. The one memory that I had that triggered it was I was playing basketball after a couple of years of not playing. And I played for about 3 hours and I couldn't walk for about a week. And adrenaline when you play just kicks in and you just keep going. And then when you stop, it's when your body then goes, oh, you've done yourself some damage.
Yeah.
And so I went on this fitness journey where I lost 20 kilos.
Wow.
And I reached the point where I was trying to make a decision between bodybuilding and weightlifting. And at that time, we happened to have the New South Wales weightlifting coach. She was a trainer in the gym. So she said, come over and try this. And I said to her, look, I just want to learn how to be better at my techniques.
Yeah.
And that kind of went to, you know, we should try to get you to compete in this and this and this. And then it just...
A slippery slide. You know, you,
next thing you know, you're like, you're representing Australia. Okay, that's cool. Thought it'd end up there, but yeah.
Wow. One of our other coaches you need to talk to, one of our new coaches, Michelle Fisher. She's a bodybuilder, I believe. And competes. Yeah. So do make sure you have a chat to her when you catch up in person. She's Sydney based too, so we'll get you guys together.
Probably see each other around it.
You will. Yeah, it's funny. Have you ever found, and I'm asking this because I'm purely curious, have you ever found something that you love that you're not good at?
I think most things you start off not good at. Like, I think personality-wise, I don't know if I ever feel I'm ever good enough. And that's probably what drives me to, you know, certain stages. Like even when we talk about the martial arts, like the reason why I don't go around telling people about it, it's obviously for me, it's not that I'm not proud of it. It's just sometimes when I look back, I kind of feel like there is probably more that I could have done. I know that Michelle Vognik, she's currently, you know, she competes in all of that. And that's just amazing. But for me, it was, even though I see her like that, I can appreciate other people, but you don't actually appreciate what you've actually been able to do yourself because, you know, it's always
interesting, isn't
it? I probably should have done more. So yeah, I guess that's a trait that I've noticed that I just keep pushing myself. So sometimes the balance is not there. So it's something I need to be a lot more aware of these days. But these days when I kind of look at things and I kind of go, do I actually really want to go down that path? Because I know if I do, it will go off and, you know, yeah. So focus right now is obviously just, you know, with the business and the new role and, just in being able to enjoy like helping people. I think at the end of the day, even though these personal achievements are great, I think the biggest fulfillment for me is being able to have conversations with other people about their goals and then going, so how do we help you, you know, achieve them? Like that to me is, you know, so much more. And I think being a martial arts teacher, I've realized that that's actually the most enjoyable part of the actual whole process is watching these little kids just get better and get better. And you teach them, not just the techniques, but I got the opportunity to work with my instructor, and he's spiritual as well. Mm. So there's that part of the martial arts which, you know, you don't get to see often.
Yeah.
And then just, you know, again, having conversations with these kids and just watching them, you know, grow and change and move through. And it's the same when I interact with my clients. Like, that to me is the biggest joy. So I'm just fortunate I get to do it on a daily basis.
Yeah, it's interesting. I find the thing I've enjoyed the most out of, well, not maybe the most, but certainly one of the things I've enjoyed the most out of learning to invest and out of the running, because the reason I asked you that was I was thinking, you know, if you're a weightlifter and you compete in, you know, for Australia and all of that, I mean, you must have a natural talent in that space somewhere. Maybe not. Maybe it is just purely your complete commitment to the process that enables you to do that. And then I'm thinking, well, what am I missing from from my running? Because no matter how much and how much I put into my running, I would never be able to, God, listen to me, all my limiting beliefs. But at this stage of my running, I'm not going to be on a podium, let alone representing Australia, right? It's running is not my natural gift.
Mm-hmm.
However, it is something that I love. Next to my husband and my daughter, it's probably, and my role at Positive Real Estate, I better put that in. It is one of the things I love the most in the world. Like, I just, even though I am completely sometimes lousy at it, but I love it because of what it teaches me. And it's that thing that you were saying about the, you know, what you can put into it and then what you get back out of it. And introducing the sport to other people as well. I obviously don't teach running in any capacity, but I certainly recruit people into the running tribe. And I would recruit everybody if I could, so be warned. And I've embraced the distance side of it because I don't have to be fast. I just have to be committed. And you remember when we had a sales catch up with the coaching team the other day, and I was talking about the word grind, and that for some people it's got quite negative connotations. It sounds like hard work.
Yeah.
I get so excited when I hear that, because for me it's about overcoming what we call the pain cave in ultra running.
Yeah. So
I think this is where I get to test myself, not against everybody else out there, because I'm going to probably not come out on top with that one, but I get to test myself against the best person that I can be. And you have that place where you can't hide from yourself. You know if you're going to come up short. You know if you're not giving it 100%. You can't cheat yourself. And that's what I love. And I love it about investing as well, because teaching clients and coaching clients investing over the years, it's watching who they become. Yes, they create some wealth for themselves. Yes, they, you know, might have a great result with a property or whatever it is that they get to do, hit their goals, go traveling, but who they get to become over that journey and how they learn to deal with challenges, how they expand their mindset, self-development they do, is where, for me, the joy of coaching and teaching real estate is. And I think that's what you were saying. I've said in a very long-winded way, but what you were saying about teaching the children martial arts and so forth, you get to see who they become on the journey. Yeah,
absolutely. And it's just watching people. What I find with that journey is that most of the time people become who they actually want to be and embrace who they I think in society we tend to hide ourselves a bit so that we sort of we feel like we fit in. Now, the majority of positive clients are going to be in a small percentage. Similar to yourself, when we talk about, you talk about running, you're probably about 95% more than everybody else in the world. But you tend to forget that, you know, you're comparing yourself to the 0.1% that represent their country and, you know, compete on that sort of level. So, again, people, when we take people on the journey to grow their business or grow their wealth, they're such a small percentage, but they forget that. And they always look at other people and kind of go, oh, you know, but this is what, so watching them realize that they're actually becoming a special group of people and actually then becoming quite confident to share that with others, and not be, you know, sometimes embarrassed or feel like they're boasting. But the reality is that nobody sees the hard yards that they put in, you know. So, so for me, it's just, you know, and part of my journey is being able to, again, I'm still learning to step into the fact that I can share the things that I've achieved, even though it's not comfortable for me naturally. So just being able to do the same thing for others and watch them be able to just step up and go, you know what, I've got a multi-million dollar property portfolio, but they then follow that most of the time with saying, it's not the property portfolio that's making me happy. It's, I get to do this. I get to spend time with my family. I get to help my charities. You know, my brother, my partner, or, you know, someone in my family has, you know, medical, a situation, I can help them through that. You can't, you almost can't put a value on those type of things. So that's the things that I feel is so exciting, when you get to help people get to that point. You know, and they can spread that within their communities too. So
absolutely, because you know, I always say to clients, it has to, your goals have to include contribution. And sometimes it sounds a bit, you know, foo-foo. Sometimes people are here at the beginning of their journey going, you know what, I just want to not have to work because I don't like my job. And that's fine. Like many of us start in that place. There is a rare percentage, and at every information night we used to do when we did them face-to-face, Kang. I used to always ask, who loves their job? Put your hands up. And probably 50% of the room would put their hands up, right? So that's awesome. I said, keep your hands up if you'd do it for free. And there would always be one or two people that would have their hands up in every group of about 30 to 50 people. It was, it became a bit of an experiment for me. And they were just about always nurses or some kind of vocation like that, where they were first responders of some description, or sometimes teachers, not as often, but teachers do get a bit of a rough trot, as do nurses and many of the first responders. So it's interesting to see. Now I've forgotten where I was going with that. There was a point to that, Kang. Rescue me. I wanted to tell that story about the couple of people. But anyway, my point being that, yes, it is why we do it, and that is important. And their material stuff is fun and exciting, and, you know, you might get to fly front of the plane. You might... you know, whatever it is that seems fun, nothing wrong with that. But where the real juice is the contribution, and that passing it forward. And so any investment in your education and your financial well-being, you get to pay it forward, and you get to decide what that looks like. And I think that's really exciting.
Yeah, it is.
We got there in the end with the message. So we're wrapping it up. I almost need to do another podcast with you. I think I need two interviews with you. I'll say that now, because there's a whole lot more that I can see on my sheet where I get the podcastee to fill in some questions for me. There's a whole lot more I'd love to talk about with you today, Kang. But I think from a time perspective, we'll wrap it up. So if you could go back in time, classic podcast question, and visit young Kang, his early adulthood, what advice would you give young Kang, knowing what you know today?
The conversation I would have with my younger self is to start investing as soon as you can.
Yeah. Very good.
What you can do at 19, 20, the ripple effect. Yes, again, that comes back to what we're talking about, the willingness to make some sacrifices.
Yeah.
Yes, you may not be able to go out every weekend. You might have to work two jobs, whatever it is.
Yep.
But what that unlocks, I'm just going to say in your late 20s, or throughout your 30s, for you to be able to actually explore what you actually want to do in life. And I think for a lot of people, they don't get that opportunity because it's you get in a job, you start, you know, you follow the path of having to buy a home, all that sort of stuff. Now you're stuck. You actually don't give yourself the opportunity to ask the question of, what is it in life that I actually want to do that's actually going to genuinely make me happy?
Mm-hmm.
I now know one person that started the journey at 19. He's probably about 35. He actually doesn't have to work, but he chooses to work. He works in building and he wants to continue his portfolio. But that story still blows me away because, you know, you don't often get that example anywhere. And to actually hear it live and actually see how it was executed and, like he goes, you know, I don't have to work. My wife doesn't have to work. All this sort of stuff. And you think you're in like your mid-30s and you have financial freedom where a lot of people start their journey around there.
Yeah.
So, you know, less thinking about that you have to travel the world, less, you know, thinking about all the toys and all the stuff you need. All of that can come later on because you get to buy bigger toys later on. So, you know. So that's what I tell myself, you know, if I could go back, just get started as soon as you can.
Yeah. Yeah. And it does seem to be the key piece of advice that most people give. And I think if we all had our time again, we'd all start younger. The other piece of advice that I hear a lot, which I think ties in with this, is Jason's buy well, never sell. Because I know a number of people that started young, but their biggest regret is that they sold.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so when you combine those two things where you accumulate some good quality property from the best property that you can buy from the moment you can start getting a loan and you leverage that time in the market and you hold that property, that's some super powerful stuff.
Yeah, I think there's also, you know, people, I always hear like noise in terms of conversations of, oh, you know, you should buy a property, you should get into the property market. But there's never an actual conversation of, you know, when you're in the property market, what do you actually do? And, you know, obviously how you go about finding the right property as well.
Yep.
I hear so many clients say, oh, you know, my kids need to buy this. I'm like, okay, I know that you want to start your kids' journey, but, you know, why are we doing this? Do they know why they're doing this?
Yeah.
And how you obviously finding the right property, etc., all of that sort of stuff. So it's also teaching them that they need to hold the property. Like the goal again is to acquire and then sit and hold it because the magic happens after you've held it, not you trying to flip properties and make money and all that sort of stuff. So
100%. There's no get rich quick scheme that I've discovered anyway. Sometimes people jag it, you know, people do get lucky. You know, there's always the story in the paper, particularly around the Sydney market of the young couple that bought a house for $1 million and it's now worth $3 million and they never have to work again, which is awesome. However, it seldom happens that fast. I know even your friend you were talking about, like, he started investing at 19 and he's in his 30s now. So that's, you know, that's still a decent amount of time in the market. Yeah. You know, at least sort of.
But he shared a story which I found was really interesting. Mm. His brother also, so their parents basically said, you need to buy property.
Mm.
Like, you know, there was no conversation around education or anything like that. It was like, you buy property, you figure out, you know, what you want to do with the rest of your life.
Mm.
And there was a point where his brother wanted to buy like a fancy sports car. And he had the conversation with his brother saying, like, you know, you can't, you don't need that now. Take this money and do this.
Mm.
Basically, his brother came back to him a little while later and basically thanked him for telling him that, because the property that he ended up buying, he was in a position to be able to buy, I think, like, it was like three supercars. But he said, now I don't need it. And had I done it at that time, I wouldn't be where I am now.
Mm.
So, you know, I hear it and think that's such an amazing lesson to be able to share a real life experience of somebody who actually was in a position to buy it. And it doesn't, you know, it takes a lot to get to that position, right? But to actually stop themselves and actually use that potential mm. money to invest, to get to a point where they could earn three, but they don't have, like, they now realize they don't need it. But had you bought it at that time, you wouldn't be where you are now. So, you know, sacrifices and you know, making the tough decisions sometimes can yeah. reap.
It's that emotional results. Intelligence, isn't it, around delayed gratification.
Yep.
And when you're able, you know, it's the difference between your teenage brain and an adult brain. You'd yeah. like to think. And that's not maligning teenagers. Teenagers make some great decisions. However, you know, using that as an example, delayed gratification, if you can
yeah.
manage to do that, not at the expense of living, but at the expense of making quality financial decisions so you do get that time in the market. Because out the other side of that is choice, and yeah. choice not only to have some, what Robert Kiyosaki calls doodads, some fun stuff, but also choice, which I think was really important that you pointed out, as to who you become.
Yeah.
Which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Awesome. So on that note, I think we'll wrap it up now with Kang. But thank you, Kang, so much for being on today's podcast. I may have to hit you up if I'm extra nice to you for a second episode. I'll use Shay for some muscle, if you don't mind.
And
feel free, we might even, I'm just putting it out there, and you may say no, but maybe even we might meet your wife. That'd be lovely, lovely to see her on the podcast.
Yeah, I'll have a talk to her about it.
Because it'd be lovely to get it from both of your perspective, you know, the journey and the
yeah.
What you sacrificed to be where you are today, which is amazing. So congratulations on everything you've achieved. Thank you so much for sharing. And I will see you around the traps and the halls at Positive Real Estate.
Thanks, Tev. Had a great time.
Bye for now. Hey, thanks for listening to Property Investor Tales. Remember to subscribe so you get notified every time a new episode drops. As you can guess, I love hearing people's property investor tales. So if you'd like to share yours, then please get in touch with me via email at propertyinvestortales@positivementor.com.au. We would also love your feedback, and I would appreciate a 5-star review over on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Remember, you can watch all of these podcasts over on YouTube at Positive Mentor or at positivementor.com.au. Until then, take care, happy investing, and bye for now.